Hi, ladies and gents, and welcome to the latest Trinity Times podcast. My name is James Forrest. I'm the editor of the Celtic blog, and I'm joined tonight, as ever, by my two colleagues, Eric Knott from Read Celtic and Joe McHugh from Video Celts. This podcast we're calling The Shape of the End because we are now in the home straight. There are two games to go until the split, seven league games and two cup games left. We are approaching the business end of the season when things get won. At the weekend, we played Hearts and it was a comfortable enough afternoon. We'll talk about Dyson in a moment or two, I'm sure. But overall, it was a good performance. It was good to see some of the injured players back in the side. And and they didn't really trouble us except for a spell early in the game where I thought we looked pretty shaky at the back. But once the goalkeeper made a couple of saves, it seemed to calm everybody's nerves. And from that point on, we didn't look like we were going to drop anything. I'll say a few bits more at the end, but first I'm going to let Joe speak about it so we can find out what he thought. Mr. McHugh, over to you.
Quite similar to you. The first 10 minutes, maybe pushing 15 minutes, looked very ropey. It looked like a rerun of the previous home match, which we'd rather forget, but we can't forget. The defence looked nervous, struggling in possession, Hearts pushed up high, and looked to realise that if they've got three or four players along our 18-yard box, if you pop it over them, there's a lot of space for guys like Nicholas Kuhn, Jota and Maeda to run onto. So it was strange to see. It was a rerun without the same level of tension for the previous match. We didn't concede a goal after 4 minutes from a dwarf at a corner. But there was problems there. And it doesn't. The manager seems this is his way to play. So people expecting a different game at Ibrox might be in for a disappointment. Maybe we have to play our one and only game better rather than find something slightly different to counter them. But strangely, the first goal, that showed you how simple it can be done. When the ball's played through, breaking the lines, broke two lines, broke the line of Hearts forwards. I think it was Schlupp or Engels passed it to McGregor. And once McGregor had possession, McGregor knew what he was doing. Dyson Maeda knew what he was doing. And that was it. Strange. I kept waiting to see Craig Gordon emerge because the ball was played quite a distance ahead of Maeda, but Gordon was hesitant. It allowed Maeda to get in possession, get himself composed, and a fantastic finish. And then it was business as usual. So I just think the team subconsciously. Everyone knows it's done, but it's not done. So they've still got to get things done. So there's three duns in a row. And then there's Dundee. But they're not hitting anything like the heights of autumn. The peaks were Aberdeen, the semi-final, and Leipzig. They were 3-0 up against Aberdeen about a month or so ago without playing particularly well. They were 3-0 up against Hearts without playing particularly well. And nothing much happened in the second half. It was good to get James Forrest, good to get Paolo Bernardo back. But other than that, the second half was ripped a write-off. So it's 3 points back to winning ways, closing in the title. And that's what all there is to say for it. So I suspect St Johnstone and Sunday will be a bit more atmosphere and life about it, the three ends of Celtic supporters. And then the next home match is Kilmarnock. That's getting very close to the home straight. So it was good. It was nice to see, but nothing spectacular, nothing particularly memorable apart from another two Maeda goals. That's 17 goals in 17 matches for Celtic in the turn of the year. That's incredible. It's over 50 and just over, and that was 150 matches. So he's scored about a third of the Celtic goals since the beginning of January, which is some going and possibly. Some contract details, very, very, very interesting. When Rodgers was asked about it on Friday, the name he mentioned was, I'll be discussing with Dermot. So anyone in any doubt, who's a decision maker at Celtic, you got it there from the horse's mouth.
Indeed.
Me go tangent, I'll pass over to Eric for his thoughts on Saffoli's 3-0 win over Hearts.
Yeah, very much sort of echoing what Joe says, in terms of we started very slowly again. It was almost as if after about 8 or 9 minutes that we suddenly realised that, shit, we're doing exactly the same as what we did against the Ibrox side. We need to get our act together. And it seems that we did get our act together for the majority of the first half after that. Sinisalo, to me, looked pretty comfortable. He made the saves that he was required to make. His distribution of the ball was pretty good. He looked comfortable. He looked like a player who was kind of had been in that role all along. You know, it was kind of, that was a seamless transition. So that was, I guess, one positive to take out of the day. But it was very much a game of two halves, as in when I said last week, you know, that we would need a statement victory. We got a statement first half victory. And I said to you, James, at halftime, it's looking like that we're going to get the statement victory that we were looking for. And I sort of expected when they came out in the second half that they would go for the jugular and maybe possibly get another one or two to round it off to, you know, a 4 or 5 goal win, which is what we wanted. But it just fell away. It fell off a cliff in the second half. And probably the frustrating thing about that was that Hearts were, you could see they've resigned themselves to the fact that they were not going to get anything out of the game, which led me to kind of question why Celtic didn't push to get any more out of it either. It seemed that both sides in the second half were happy enough to rest on their laurels and go with the status quo. So, the only positives that you could take out of the second half were the introduction of Paulo Bernardo and James Forrest, which means that we've got a bit of momentum in terms of injuries coming back, and we're building up towards the end of the season with players coming back that we need to come back. So, look, like Joe said, it's 3 points, it's 3 goals, another 2 for Dyson, which is the scary thing about this is that every time he does this and every time he has a performance like this, his value is rising in the eyes of the board, you know. So that's the worrying factor there, you know, that he's gaining value with every game that passes by. And any striker that's scoring 30 plus goals in a game, or 30 plus goals in a season, which he's going to do, he could hit 40 at the rate he's going, is going to attract attention from other clubs. So I personally won't relax until we get him tied down on another deal, you know, on a new deal. And I think, you know, I'd allude to what you said, James, in your one of your blogs recently there. It could be, if we do get him tied down, it could be the catalyst to getting Brendan tied down as well.
Yeah.
Because Brendan's pushing for this. So
yeah.
It's definitely looking like if Dyson gets signed, then Rodgers will follow suit, because if he's pushing hard to get that player, that means he wants to work with that player. So it's an indicator, you know, that it's going to be what the move that we want in terms of both deals getting wrapped up, hopefully before the end of the season would be ideal. Not going into the transfer window with that speculation hanging around, or that kind of worry over your head that somebody could come in with 25 or 30 million and you know, then we go goodbye, 2 of our main strikers gone in 1 season. But I don't even talk about that. So yeah, that's my view on the game. That's the way I saw it, and not much different to Joe.
I would say one thing about the way we played. I said in last week's podcast, I told that story about the French after Agincourt and the discussion about the longbow. I thought we brought the longbow to this game, actually, at the weekend. I thought that we played a lot more direct at times, and we didn't waste so much time trying to pass the ball off side to side and all those little sharp passes forward. We were just... There were a couple of times in the game that we went for the long bomb, and it seemed to serve us quite well. And I just wondered if maybe we are seeing a little modest evolution in the tactical approach for Ibrox. Because I didn't think that... I don't think that we need a revolutionary change of system to beat that lot. I just think we need to play more direct. They thrive on the fact that we play all those little short passes out for the back. And a lot of the joy they've had against us has come from pressing us high up the pitch. But if we utilise the pace of the players out wide and the main striker by just bombing the ball over the midfield, I don't see how they can counter that. Their defence isn't built to counter that. And I wondered if we saw a little bit of a tweak to how we intend to play. I thought that there was, that was evident, especially in the first half. Not so much in the second when we went back to tippy-tappy stuff. But the first half, certainly, I thought that we had evolved the system a wee bit and brought the long ball, long bow to the fight for once. You guys talked there for a wee bit about getting Dyson signed up on a new contract and whether or not that will tell us what Rodgers' future might be. What do you think of that, Joe? Do you think that if Maeda signs a new deal, that's a sign that Rodgers is getting his way and intends to hang around a bit longer?
It will be a sign, but I would be amazed if Rodgers signs early. I would say that was very foolish of him, because we all know that Rodgers
that's
is
a fact. I've got to say that's a fact.
Rodgers is a little bit more ambitious than the Celtic board. I think anyone in world football is a bit more ambitious than the Celtic board. So it would certainly help. It would be a pointer towards Rodgers hanging around and even better, signing on a longer contract. Some people maybe not so keen on Rodgers over the last couple of months. Before the turn of the year, after the RB Leipzig game, after the Atlanta game, yep, get him signed up, get him. But I think there's a bit more of a lukewarm reaction to it. The bottom line is he's the best manager we're going to get. If Rodgers was to go, who knows? There is a track record. Whoever's at the top of Dermot Desmond's contact book, whether that's Gordon Strachan, Brendan Rodgers, or Neil Lennon, now and then Ange Postecoglou's agent will force his way to the top of the contact book. But it would help towards getting Rodgers to stay. If Maeda was sold, it'd be more likely that Rodgers would just say, "I'll see out my 3 years." But I think Rodgers would be looking for some more concrete signs than just Maeda. And there's no reason not to. I think we're probably going to pay HMRC another 10, 12, 13, 14 million pounds corporation tax. It would be nice if we spent some of that on buying some good footballers to make the team better. But it's always a guessing game. You can't read what's going on at Celtic. There's no firm signs that they're all on the same hymn sheet, that they're all ambitious. They all go in the same direction. Rodgers is certainly ambitious. He'll look to get into the Champions League, which is still a decent if. There'll be two significant ties to get through, two significant matches to get through towards the end of August. Possibly a better indicator will be, does Rodgers get players in for pre-season training in the summer than just signing Maeda? If there's players signed up in time to go pre-season training, if there's two or three new faces in the team for the first SPFL match, I'd say the omens are pretty good. But we'll wait and see, because it's always a case of trying to read the signs, and the signals are never quite clear. They're open to interpretation. So there's my typically cynical take on it. I suspect Eric might be along similar cynical lines.
Yeah, I would be on pretty similar cynical lines to that, yeah. I just as Joe was talking there, I was kind of thinking to myself, this whole situation where would we get players in time for a pre-season? Would we be ready for, you know, the season with the transfers done and dusted before the season kicked off? And I was just thinking to myself that this is always what we think should be happening, but it's never what the board thinks should be happening. And that's the reality of our board. We just can't rely on them to do that kind of joined up thinking, because as Joe alluded to there a few minutes ago, we don't know what way they're thinking, and we don't know if there is joined up thinking going on inside there. It certainly, a lot of the time, appears to be all haphazard. So it's very hard to know what plan they have. And if you go back to the point that Joe made earlier on there about knowing who the boss is, when Brendan said that he's going straight to Dermot Desmond to get Dyson signed up, the way I look at that is, it's my view is Brendan is probably worried that if a big, you know, with the fact that Dyson is racking up the goals at the moment, Brendan probably has it in the back of his mind that, look, there's a serious chance a bid could come in for this guy.
Yeah.
And I want to get him tied down before that happens. So I'm just literally going above these guys. I'm going straight to Dermot and I'm getting it sorted. And that's the way I see it. That's what he's doing, because he's no fool. He knows that every game that goes by that Dyson is banging in a brace here and there. It's and he's probably, you know, he's knocking on the door of a hat trick, which he was on Saturday. The guy is just, it's going to attract interest. It's definitely going to attract interest that we don't want, you know. So, yeah. But as for the Bourne joint of thinking in the transfer window, I'm not expecting anything. I never do anymore. That's the reality.
Well, it seems that Brendan has made one key decision on the summer, and it won't come as any surprise to anybody who reads our blogs, because we've all talked about it often enough that it probably will be easier for us to sign a winger than it will be to sign a striker as good as this guy. So it seems to me that a decision's been made there.
But we give no credit to the board for that.
Probably not going to get Chris Gardner or any of the other big name signings that we were all told would be definitely coming in the summer after the January transfer window let down. No surprise, Joe.
Not at all.
That Brendan has at least seen the writing on the wall and realised what he's not going to get.
Yeah, he's just went public about it. I'm sure he's realised for a long time. The initial contact to bring him back as manager was done by a non-executive director, Dermot Desmond, and then the Circus Act headed out to Santa Ponsa to chat him up, sweet talk him. I mean, imagine getting sweet talked by somebody as underwhelming as Michael Nicholson. So I'm sure Brendan was just checking him out to see if it was a real Michael Nicholson and not a cardboard cutout, which apparently has got more charisma. So he knew what he was dealing with. I think every Celtic manager knows that there's guys in suits, there's guys in salaries, but the main man always is Dermot Desmond. And I've heard from people involved in transfer discussions that Michael Nicholson is a long way short of being a decision maker. Whatever deal might be discussed, whatever deal might be agreed, there's a couple of phone calls to be made before Celtic can put that forward. So it confirms most of our suspicions. It's hardly suspicions. It's not a secret. It's not a revelation. Just confirmation that we do pay a CEO. He attends matches. He never says anything on any subject whatsoever. And it seems that when it comes to the serious decisions, there's somebody between Barbados and Dublin that makes the decisions. So we'll wait for it. It's not a satisfactory situation, but I remember an old phrase from working days: it is what it is, which just means shut up and get on with it and cross your fingers and make the best of it. So another cynical view from East Kilbride.
Well, whenever I think about Michael Nicholson and his leadership skills, I always think about a story about the former Tory Health Secretary, Andrew Lansley. When he was at university, he bought himself a Porsche and he took it to his girlfriend's house for the weekend when he first met her parents. And after him being there for 2 days of dull, monotonous, one-note conversation, her mother took her aside and said, "Tell me the truth, is it the car?" That's how I always think about Michael Nicholson. But yeah, anyway.
I used to play Friday night soccer or football with a couple of mates, and we had a guy who used to play with us, and we nicknamed him Silent Mike because he just never opened his mouth, but he would always only put his hand up if he wanted the ball or anything like that. And I don't know, that's what I call Michael Nicholson now, Silent Mike, because it's like Silent Mike that used to play. He was a great football player, but he just wouldn't open his mouth. He wouldn't call for a ball. He wouldn't say anything. He'd even walk in before we start and we'd say, "Hey, Mike, how's it going?" It was just like, no, he could talk. I mean, he was able to talk, but he didn't, just like Michael Nicholson.
Yeah. Indeed.
How lucky are we?
We better get on. Cup semi-final. is fast approaching. And we got a rather bizarre notification from the club in relation to that about the ticket arrangements for Hampden. They are a bit of a mess. Let's face it, they are a bit of a mess. Digital only, non-transferable. In order to get one, you have to download an SFA or Hampden app. And as part of that, you have to agree to sharing all your personal details with whichever third party, whoever runs the app, decides is applicable. Lot of anger among Celtic supporters clubs. A lot of very pissed off people. As a section of support, for example, that don't own smartphones and thus have no way to get the tickets that they would normally get. There is a big debate going on about whose fault it is. Is it down to Celtic? Is it down to the SFA? I don't think it could have happened without Celtic in some way being involved in the conversation. There is a report that says that Hearts fans and Aberdeen fans were notified weeks ago that this would be the arrangement. And so that does tend to cast some of the blame on Celtic for not telling us or not introducing us to this possibility sooner. But I don't know. The whole thing is a mess. I've spoke to a lot of people about it, and the level of anger is pretty volcanic. There's a lot of very pissed off supporters groups, and the association had a meeting yesterday, and it's on the agenda, and they want a meeting with the club about it. Joe, what do you think of this? What the hell are we thinking about getting involved in something like this?
I'm not quite as revolutionary as yourself. I think maybe 50%, possibly more than 50% of supporters will accept it and think that's the way it's going. If you go to an airport, you've got your boarding card, boarding pass, probably on your phone. There's not many people printing them out and various other things. It's all phone related, but it's not for everyone. And that's where things should have been.
I mean, the one thing I'll say about the boarding pass, right, is that the boarding pass is, I mean, your boarding pass is non-transferable. That is easy to understand. But we all know that there are people, right, who have bought a seat at Celtic Park and have never sat on it for the last 10 years, right? They'll swap it with their mates or whatever it is so they can sit where they want to sit. And there are other people who have bought a season ticket and can't attend every single game. And so give it to their brother, their cousin, their sister, their auntie, their uncle, whatever it is. Right? And our club makes no provision for that at all because it doesn't have a ticket resale scheme. It doesn't have a ticket exchange scheme. And marrying the ticket to your smartphone is, it's sort of counter to the way we watch football. It's counter to the football experience. And as I said, you're probably right. There are 50% of your fans who will not care, right? But among the other 50%, there might be 10% who can't do it this way or simply don't want to do it this way and won't do it this way. And we're disenfranchising them for no reason that I can see, to no benefit.
Yeah, sorry, well, that's the Celtic way. Celtic board, they wouldn't have thought twice when this was sent through to them from the SFA. There's nobody in the Celtic board who said, "What about these old guys that don't have a phone or don't have a smartphone?" They just say, "Well, this could be a money raiser. Once we get everybody on the app, we can maybe introduce it at Celtic Park next season or the season after." So,
well, there is talk that that's being discussed. Yeah. That's an option they're looking at.
That's the way Celtic think. And another telltale sign is John Paul Taylor, decent guy, but he has tweeted absolutely nothing since the 16th of March. Celtic supporters are looking at, they're following the St Johnston SLO for some advice on what's going on with these tickets. True. In the transfer, you mentioned that Hearts and Aberdeen supporters knew in advance.
This well, I heard that. It's going to be, I imagine it may be, but
yeah, it's possibly true. But there's been absolute silence from Celtic, and when they're silent, you know that they know that they're guilty. They're not giving a hoot for supporters. They'll pat you in the back and tell you how fantastic it is. Come along to Hampden, roll the boys on, blah blah blah. But it shouldn't require supporters associations or others pushing for meetings. The club should be aware of these things in advance, and they should. If Aberdeen and Hearts knew about it, Celtic probably knew about it as well. And the St Johnston SLO seems to be doing a fair bit of work to communicating with the supporters. John Paul Taylor at Celtic has probably got 10, 15, 20 times the workload. And again, that's typical. There should be more than one SLO, but it's a box-ticking exercise. Most supporters will be able to get on with it, but there's other things. What if the Wi-Fi is down at Hampden? What if this, that, and that happens? And the other thing I've read of is normally if you've got the Hampden app, you can transfer tickets, but it seems to be, in this instance, you buy a ticket for from Celtic. Uh-huh. That ticket is assigned to you, to your phone, and nothing else. So if you can't make it, and there'll be people on holiday, I think it's Easter Sunday, April the 20th, there'll be people on holiday that weekend that get allocated a ticket, and if they want to give that ticket to someone else, as it stands, they'll need to hand them their mobile phone, which might be for a week or so. So just it's typical of Celtic. It's typical of the contempt that football supporters are treated with in this country, that there was no lead-in. They should have trialled it. They could have made it voluntary for this, and they'd have found out how many people wanted to be voluntary and how many people still needed an old-fashioned. Who cares? There will soon be season ticket renewal campaign, Celtic family, etc., etc. And the bottom line is a balance sheet. It's not going to impact the balance sheet this season. So what? Let's go on with it. Unfortunately, I think that's my third cynical answer in a row. There might be more cynical answers as well, but that's what you get from a long time watching Celtic, and particularly this current regime.
Well, before we pass on to Eric, you've said something interesting which I had completely forgotten about. I spoke to a couple of people who have downloaded this app to watch Scotland, and as you said, they're allowed to exchange their tickets. They're allowed to swap them with other people and whatnot, and we're not even getting allowed to do that. So that has to have come from Celtic. That's not an SFA requirement. The SFA's never required that when watching Scotland. So that has to have come from the clubs. And I think that's utter nonsense. Sorry,
are
Eric,
you surprised? James, are you surprised?
I just think it's... Someone's taking leave of their senses over this. I really genuinely don't understand what the club's thinking about involving us, selling this, and allowing this. But I'm as cynical as you in certain elements, right, of the board, but I'm shocked by this. You don't seem shocked. You're clearly more cynical than me, but I'm genuinely shocked that they've done this. Sorry.
I'd be shocked if they ever done anything positive. I'd be shocked. But, that's enough of us. Over to Eric.
Look. Personally, I'm a fairly tech-savvy person, so this kind of thing wouldn't faze me. However, when the chairman of RCFC sent through all the details on it, because there is a few of our guys going over, and obviously I was texted about it, I was a bit confused when I was looking at it. I said, what the hell is this like? What's this about, you know? So I had to read it a couple of times to figure out what it was, and then I kind of figured out, you know, I didn't take too much notice of it at the time. And then I read your blog following it, James, and I was kind of well clued into what it was all about then. And to my mind, like Joe, the only way this is going to affect the board is if it loses them money. So they're not going to be fazed by this unless it impacts on takings in some way or another. And possibly the only way that could happen is, you know, if they lose the 10% that you're alluding to there, that could be disenfranchised. The older guys, the 60s, 70s, 80s group, you know, who would always be used to bringing their paper ticket. And who would probably not have smartphones, probably have keyboard phones, you know, or whatever the case may be. So I think the whole Celtic board attitude in this is like, it's moving with the times, just get on with it. And they have that sort of mentality without actually thinking of the broader effects or the collateral damage that this kind of a decision is going to make, without actually thoroughly researching it properly. And I feel that like a proper option would have been, as you said, to trial it amongst the people who are tech savvy and let those that aren't continue doing things the way that they're doing them. But it's just, that's always the approach of our board. It's all or nothing. All or nothing to suit them, not us. And that's always been the case. And they've done exactly what you'd expect of them in this scenario. But I could still see it going a little bit wrong for them. So, and I could still see them having to reconsider on this down the line, because It may, if some people say, nah, fuck this, I'm not doing this. You know, just out of traditionalism, I suppose you could call it, because they're people who've always been used to having paper tickets. I do it this way. So I don't know. It's just a complete lack of consultation, the complete lack of communication with the customer base, which it is, to actually send them a customary message out and say, look, this is what we're thinking of doing. Give us your opinion on it. Even just send out a survey.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've sent out surveys. They've sent out surveys before in relation to other things. Why couldn't they have sent out a survey in relation to this? You know, so that's kind of the thing that that I feel could have been done, and they just decided not to do that. So it's all a bit haphazard, and it should have been done, as I said, with a bit of consultation with the fan base. But there is no consultation with the fan base. There is no communication with the fan base. There is no nothing with the fan base. So as with Joe, I'm just a cynical. I don't expect anything less from our board. Nothing surprises me. And if they did something right, that's what it shocked me, you know. But that's the way they operate. They're fly by nights. That's what they are. Like they just put it out there. They take a chance. It's like the whole Dyson Maeda scenario right now. Last January, we were talking about the fact that it was going to be forced on Brendan Rodgers to have him moved into the middle, and that they would then see themselves as geniuses afterwards if it worked out. And that is the way that they're seeing themselves now. They took a gamble and it's paid off. They're taking a gamble with this. They think this will pay off. Maybe it will. Maybe it won't. Who's to know? But
Jesus, you just said it. You're right. Because I suspect that when it comes to the Maeda thing, that is exactly how they see it. Oh, we were right. The manager wanted to play him out wide, but we told him he can play perfectly well through the middle. So that's what you're going to do. And don't worry, it'll all work out. I wouldn't be surprised if that was... That is exactly how they were thinking about it.
Eric mentioned the survey. James, 1 minute. Eric mentioned the survey. At the end of last season, Celtic launched their biggest ever survey. It was to take 25 minutes of supporters' time. And I think there's a deadline at some point in July 2024 to complete the survey. Here we are, 9 months later, and nothing whatsoever has been heard about the survey. So... either they just binned it. It was too much hard work. They maybe sent a third party to get it done, or possibly they get the wrong results from the survey, so they binned it. So, if you're looking for a survey from Celtic, it might take a little while to get any answers back.
Most surveys, Joe, are anonymous, so that suits the Celtic board to perfection because our board is anonymous. So. Let's call it as it is.
Terrible. So, I mean, I was going to say something on this. What the hell was I going to say? I've forgotten. Talking about surveys and the board being the nasty people that they are. I mean, if they try this for season tickets, right, Joe, they will lose money. I mean, how could they not lose money if they do this for season tickets? There are some people who won't buy season tickets under this scheme. Right, and if they're relying on the waiting list to bail them out, I don't think that's going to work either. And there's one other thing on top of it, right? I personally am sick and tired of every single time I fill something in online, my personal data getting sent to who fucking knows who, right? I'm not even sure I want Celtic having my personal data where they can sell it to anybody they want. I certainly don't want to give it to the SFA. I think that's... quite possibly the thing that annoys me on a personal level most about this. The fact that I have to download some fucking app that I don't want and I've no use for. And on top of that, I've got to give the SFA every bit of goddamn information about me that they want. I don't feel happy about that at all. And this is what I mean. But what are we thinking about? What's the club thinking about getting involved in this? It's ludicrous. It's one of the worst decisions I think that I can remember them making in a long time in relation to the fans, in relation to their relationship with the fans. They clearly don't care what fans think. They clearly have no interest in what our views are, because any sensible club would have asked our views on this and been told how unacceptable and how stupid it was. But they've just rode roughshod over us and have no cared at all. Communication problems are terrible. And some of the guys are posting comments on here and they're right. I mean, How are you supposed to operate this? And what? And what? So are you supposed to like take whatever ticket you get allocated? Well, what happens if you sit with somebody? Sit with your kids or something, right? Is there a chance you're going to get split up? There's been no clarification on any of that. It's the worst idea in a long history of bad ideas, which your club's associated itself with. And I don't know what the thinking is. I'm genuinely gobsmacked. I know you're not, Joe, but I'm genuinely gobsmacked.
Neither am I.
The thinking is money. The quickest and easiest way to make as much money as possible while doing as little as possible. Every single time. I mean, since we were last on, we've had a development on the events at London Road, and Celtic have offered supporters an email address where they can send their information to. And as you mentioned, one of your blogs, there's a similar incident in September 2018, the first time there was only 850 away fans. Instantly, Celtic said everything went swimmingly, everything worked very well. And then 24 hours, they did a bit of a rethink. Then they decided to get outside consultants to find out what actually happened. Instead of Celtic finding out what had actually happened on literally their doorstep. And then I think it took about a year or 18 months. They come up with some wishy-washy thing about lessons will be learned and it won't happen again, blah, blah, blah. It's deflection all the time. They'll not take responsibility for anything. And I suspect with this ticketing thing, they would maybe be quite happy to get rid of some of those pesky older season ticket holders who are possibly getting a discount on their season ticket and bring in younger, tech-savvy guys with smartphones. If it was a choice between a lifelong supporter that's been going to the ground for 30, 40 years or somebody new with a smartphone that's going to spend a bit more money commercially, no-brainer.
Yep. Right, okay.
James made a point. James Kennedy, one of the commenters there, made a point about the, you know, about what you just said earlier on there, Joe, about the email, the inbox for what happened with Police Scotland. 60,000 fans on the internet at the same time is a nightmare. Who's going to mend that? Who's going to respond to that? How is it even possible to respond to that? So that those emails will be going into the ether, into the ether, and they'll stay there and they'll never be answered. So
the thing is, it just seems to me, anything that involves tech has got some chance of going wrong somewhere. I mean, this has got chaos written all over it. This could be a complete and utter shit show. And who will take responsibility for that? Maybe between Celtic and the SFA, they'll hire a consultant this time and tell us where it all went wrong. And it'll be, oh, we should have had paper tickets. Or we should have had the option for fans to have paper tickets. You know, after having spent 2 years investigating the issue and £10,000 hiring the consultants, that's what they'll come up with.
That's sort of like Peter Lawwell coming on and saying that it was a bad idea to go to Dubai.
Right. I think we could I could talk this subject all night, but we'll try and move on. last week, we had a discussion about the Ibrox situation and the message that was sent to their supporters in the aftermath of UEFA fining them. This weekend, against Dundee, just before the game, the club sent out another message. And for the first time in years, it's actually told the fans that they have to watch what they're singing at games. Are we looking at a paradigm shift here? Is this profound culture shock to some of their supporters going to last? I personally think that if this is being pushed by the possibility of the investors walking away, there's no reason for the investors to ditch the policy once they're in control, if they get control. So for me, I think we might finally be looking at a major cultural shift or an attempt to impose a cultural shift on the Ibrox fans. This is going to cause problems, of course. No end of them. And I would not want to be in the shoes of any investors who are trying to force this issue. But if their club is getting serious about it, how serious can it get first? And what's the backlash going to be like? Joe, what do you think?
No, it's Eric's turn. I've stole the thunder too many times. Eric can go first and I'll follow up afterwards.
this is an enforced change. And this is, I mean, yeah, absolutely. And this is riding. Yeah, well, that all depends on the Ibrox supporters, and they're not going to embrace this forced change because they don't embrace any kind of change. They haven't changed in their entire existence, whether it be the, you know, the fan base of the dead club or the fan base of the current club, which is 10 times worse, hasn't changed in its entire existence. So the simple fact is this kind of enforced change is not going to go down well with that fan base. It's that simple. I did an article on this last week, you know, where I said UEFA had put them, you know, 2 years on mute, because that's effectively all it is. They're going to be, or at least they've been told to be on mute for 2 years when it comes to Europe. Whether or not they actually will have the ability to force them to do that domestically is another question. And I think my own personal point of view is that I think that the Ibrox board is really bricking it now, because they're terrified that the game against us next month, or no, we're still, today's the 31st, so effectively next month in April, they're terrified that that game is where the fans are just going to let loose. And they'll have, if the consortium is coming to buy the club, which it's just a lot, it's just, the talk is going on and on and on, and nothing's happening, nothing's changing, nobody's coming out and saying that anything's actually happening, other than Keith Jackson. And nothing has changed from day one when he broke his world exclusive. But I guess the point I'm making is that I think the game against us is going to be make or break. They're terrified that the fan base is just going to lose the plot and start screaming the Billy Boys and screaming and hurling abuse at Celtic players. And it's going to paint the worst possible picture that they could actually present to the buyers. So what they're trying to do at the moment is they're trying to get all their ducks in a row. They're trying to keep their, you know, they're sending out these statements to get the fan base, to try and get the fan base on board. But this is a fan base you're not going to get on board, and especially when it comes to us. Whatever about Europe, they might be able to keep themselves contained in Europe. But when it comes to us, every bit of bigotry, vile chants, songs, everything that they can possibly do and say negative about us, they will do, and they will do it with gusto. And I really feel that the consortium, if they're going to buy the club, have told them that we want this gone. We do not want to see evidence of this at any game, whether it be in Europe or whether it be in Scotland. Because if we're going to become the face of this club, then this club cleans its act up. It's that simple.
Yeah.
And if you don't clean your act up, we're not interested in buying you. Because as you've written about enough times, James, they're coming from one of the most freely expressive cities in the United States, in San Francisco. That's their background. That's the kind of people they are. So to them, coming over and seeing that kind of behavior, that's alien to them. It's absolutely alien to them. I would say they have never seen anything like that.
No.
And I think it's more to the point, they don't want to see anything like that. They're just not interested. And
they must have been genuinely shocked to see that banner in the stand at the European game. They must have been genuinely horrified to see that.
Absolutely. They must have been totally like, what the hell is this? And that was the catalyst to what we've seen happen since. I think an awful lot is right. I firmly believe that the takeover is riding on how they're going to behave in Europe, because there's the threat of the governing being shut down, the Copeland Road stand being shut down. That threat is hanging over them now. That's a financial impact. That's a huge financial impact if that happens. Can we see them keeping their mouths shut in the Athletic Bilbao game? It's going to be a struggle because Athletic Bilbao are in some way affiliated with us. You know, we have a very good relationship with Athletic Bilbao. We've all touched on that in our blogs. And I would imagine before all of this came to a fore, you know, with the board where they brought out all these statements, they probably, I mean, you can be 100% guaranteed that the Onion Bears had a massive plan in place for the Athletic Bilbao fans and the players, the amount of abuse that they were going to hurl at them when they came to play at Ibrox. But that's all been put in check now. So yeah, I mean, I really believe that these statements are coming out because they're terrified. They're absolutely petrified that the whole deal is going to fall through. It's hanging by a thread. It really is. It's hanging by a thread, and it's this that's driving it.
That is one other possibility here, Eric, right? We don't know what's happening behind the scenes, right? So is it possible that the takeover's already on the brink of collapse and that they are now scapegoating the union brats as the reason why it has?
Very possible. I would actually say that's a strong possibility. That
just a theory.
One way or another, somebody has to be accountable if this all falls through.
Oh yeah.
So as I said earlier on, they're getting all their ducks in a row.
They will blame. Yeah. They have to blame someone.
They're getting all their ducks in a row. So whether that is to ensure that this takeover goes through, or that they're going to have a scapegoat when it doesn't, they're covering both bases, possibly.
Yep. Very possibly. What about you, Joe? What do you think?
There is no takeover. Absolutely no takeover whatsoever. None at all.
The fake over theory.
none whatsoever. On the 19th of February, Keith Jackson with his world exclusive told the Records Army of Readers. I love that phrase, the Army of Readers. But talks were at an advanced stage. So best part of 6 weeks later.
7-11, mate.
6 weeks later, still nothing's happened. All that's happened is Dave King has found some guy in America, Andrew Kavanagh, that might be interested in his shares. And yeah. Andrew Kavanagh's done a couple of nice jollies, a bit of hospitality, Old Trafford, Fenerbahce, Celtic Park, Ibrox, great. He can go back to doing whatever he's doing. So there's nothing happened with this takeover. And it's been a nice six-week deflection. There's no way in this planet that Douglas Park will be going along with anything instigated from Dave King. The others, they've spent some big money getting their shares, and anyone doing due diligence, a company that's lost 17 million last season, likely to lose about 25 million this season, and they're still lumbered with contracts for guys like Rabbi Matondo, Jack Butland, Danilo, Jose Cifuentes, Ben Davies, etc. you need to rid all of them, and then you need to get on top of Celtic. So there is no takeover taking place. I suspect Patrick Stewart has been duped, to use a favourite word, and now that he's in there, he's possibly looking for a way out, and if he can wage war with the union bears, and while that's getting on, and get it muddied up and pretend that there's a takeover happening, and it might be related to the horrible behaviour of the supporters. Anyone remotely looking at buying them, the most basic due diligence would tell you that their fan base is a little bit different, and that's their unique selling point. That's their rallying call. For all the demented folk and throughout Lanarkshire, Ayrshire, Lothians, Edinburgh, and other parts of Scotland, parts of the north of Ireland, if you're a bit off the wall, come to Ibrox, you'll be in amongst your own, and you can sing and chant all your prejudices and nobody bothers. In fact, it's quite welcome. But Patrick Stewart, he's been in England almost all his working life. He probably thought it was maybe quite a nice franchise to come up and get involved in. He didn't have anything. He'd left Manchester United, so he's taken on the Ibrox CEO post. It's probably a bit more toxic in terms of the supporters, in terms of the debt, than he imagined. It's not a Southampton, it's not a Crystal Palace, a Fulham, or anyone else where you can shuffle a few things round and things start to move in your favour. It's very different. So I don't think there's any takeover taking place. They're trying to humanise their support. That's not going to go down well. And there's a predictable end to all this. They're going to be exactly the same. They're going to finish this season with the same setup as they had at the start of the season. And they don't know where to go. But The takeover talk's given them 6 weeks so far of deflection. Some folks saying it'll be the end of April, it'll be May before making a decision. But the guy that broke the World Explosive said it was that his talks were at an advanced stage in the 19th of February. Nothing's happening, and the mess is there. Nobody in the west of Scotland wants to get associated with them. There's no West of Scotland consortium coming in to take it. That happened to the old club as well. So the thought that some Americans will come in and sanitise the place and turn that into a money-making venture and bring them into the 21st century is just absolute fantasy. So I look forward to it falling apart, and we know who'll have the World Explosive on that.
It'll be us.
Yeah, yeah. See, I'll tell you what I found interesting, right? I still think that some version of this will happen, right? It won't be anything like the version that their fans expect. It won't be anything like the Keith Jackson Daily Record version, but I still think, by and large, some version of it will happen. But I was reading the Spurs finances tonight because a couple of things in it caught my eye. Like, their turnover is enormous. Half £1 billion turnover. The ninth richest club in the world, right? So I thought, how does Spurs make £500 million? Spurs, right? I haven't won anything in decades. How do they make that kind of money? And, of course, 100 million it is in season ticket sales for that big massive stadium and theirs and match day revenue. 140-odd million is TV money. I thought, where is the rest? And it's all in commercial partnerships, right? Now, this is the Daily Record version of what they think will happen at Ibrox, right? The fact that the Spurs are allowing their stadium to become a multi-use facility, a multi-use venue. They're staging concerts there. They're staging American football games there. All the usual, right? And I'm thinking, well, London's a city, what, 7 or 8 million people? Scotland's population is not even a threat. Right? Scotland's population is not even a third of that, right? So there's a whole customer base in there that simply does not exist here. And then I thought, and what of the customer base that does exist? 3/4 of this country hates their club. There's no earthly way in which most people who are not already affiliated with them are going to go and watch a concert at Ibrox if it enriches them by even one penny, or watch an American football game. Should that ever transpire, which it won't, not one penny, right? And I don't know if the Americans have overlooked a lot of on-the-ground facts here in their due diligence, but the possibility for making the kind of money that Spurs make in London, it's non-existent here. So some version of it will happen, but I don't know what they think the end game is. I don't know where they think the profits are coming from. I don't know where they think they're getting a return on their investment. And the only options that I can come up with for where they will get a return on their investment aren't options that the Ibrox fans are going to like very much. So I'm a bit baffled. I had to have a good look at where Spurs made their money. And there are all sorts of possibilities there which are completely closed off to this lot up here, because most of this country doesn't like them that much and won't do anything to help them in any way, shape, or form. So I don't know whether the American investors have overlooked that fact, but eventually they will need to face up to it if they actually go through with this. Because even getting the deal done is going to cost well in excess of £50 million. So I really don't. I'm still not seeing it. I'm still not seeing where the profit is. I'm still not seeing where the big money machine that they're going to build them in is coming from. I do know this. Spurs fans pay the highest season ticket prices of any club in that league. And Leeds fans recently found out that theirs are going up 20%, I think it is. So that's one way of squeezing some cash out of them. But they're not going to like that either. 20% increase in your season tickets. I don't think they're going to find that palatable. So, and I'm not quite seeing this. I'm not quite getting it. But that brings me to another Ibrox-related subject. We'll get to you in a sec, Eric. Brings me to another Ibrox-related subject, and you can weigh on this one as well. It's been another great weekend for Barry the Bold, Barry the Brave, Barry the Genius. Am I nuts, or is it more and more looking like he's going to get this gig? Eric, where do you stand on those things, man?
I did an article earlier on today where I felt that the bubble, the Barry bubble, is very close to bursting.
It should be.
And the reason I feel it was an absolutely diabolical performance. I mean, if Dundee were more clinical, they could have absolutely hammered them. And this is the team that is second from bottom in the Scottish Premiership at the moment. So if they had been brave enough and bold enough to take their chances and to see the game out, you know, that would have been an absolutely catastrophic defeat for Barry Ferguson, considering the position of the two clubs. There was the second from top versus the second from bottom. But I guess the point I'm making is he's teetering on the edge all the time. And he's just getting by the skin of his teeth in every game that he plays. Even against us, he got by the skin of his teeth. He got by simply because our defence made a mistake and they took advantage of it. But the simple fact is, since he's taken over, they've scored 16 goals, they've conceded 12. And eventually, when you're conceding that amount of goals, eventually that's going to tip. It's in his favour at the moment, but it's going to tip against him eventually. You can't continuously concede that level of goals without it eventually ending up being catastrophic. And I made the point today that he's coming up against, you have a meeting of two effectively rookie managers next week at Ibrox between Hibs and themselves. And David Gray, the big difference between him and David Gray is Barry Ferguson has created a hybrid version of Philippe Clement's tactical genius, right? And what I mean, and by a hybrid, I mean the only addition that he's made in that hybrid is his sideline antics and his real Rangers man persona that he's brought into the dressing room. And that to me is the only thing that's making a difference. And I think it's players are at the point now where they're afraid of the wrath of Barry, so they'd rather win the game than have to deal with his tantrums afterwards. But I guess what I'm saying is he's coming up against David Gray on Saturday. And David Gray has had to, through hard graft, create his own tactical system with Hibs. He took over Hibs in September for the start of the season. He had a very tough start to the season. Around Christmas time, coming into early December there, people were writing him off. People were saying, this guy's not going to last. He's just another one of these bad decisions by Hibs, and he's going to crash and burn. But he got it together, and he turned it around, and he's got himself from off the foot of the table right up to third position, and he's just one position below the Ibrox side at the moment. But he has done that through his own tactical decisions, through building the team the way that he has wanted to do it, and he's done it he has less of a budget than the Ibrox side have, but that's neither here nor there because Barry Ferguson has taken them over late in the season. But I guess the point I'm making is Barry has done nothing other than use the tactics of Philippe Clement and throw in his whole Rangers persona, his real Rangers persona. All right? So that's going to come crashing down very soon. And I wouldn't be surprised if David Gray brought it crashing down on Saturday. Because all David Gray has to go there, like David Gray, all he has to do is look at the performance against Dundee. All he has to say to his team is, look, these guys were second from bottom. These guys could have absolutely pasted them. If we go there with no fear and we just keep coming at them and we keep breaking them down, we will beat them. Motherwell have done it. There's no reason that we can't do it. And that's, I think, in the old words of Dave King, it'll all come crashing down like a house of cards eventually. And when it does, the floodgates will open. And Barry Ferguson, the great pretender, will be found out. Could happen next Saturday. I'd really, really love it if it was us that went there and did it. But I think there's managers out there who have his number already. Yeah. You know, Dundee nearly had it on Saturday. Tony Doherty nearly had it. He just didn't have the courage or the conviction to see it out. And you could see, you knew, you just watching that game, you knew in the last 10 minutes where it was going and what way it was going to end up. You could just sense it.
There wasn't enough self-belief in the Dundee players to try and hold on to it.
But that's it, I think it's only a matter of time before it all comes crashing down. And when it does, then who's waiting in the wings? Stevie G. That's the worst thing. What's the worst that can happen?
That would sort us all, I think. It's funny because I was trying to get an analogy that fit, and I came up with one this morning for the article I wrote. There's a British thriller called Paper Mask, starring Paul McGann. He's a hospital porter, and he spent so long hanging around the doctors and all that that he sort of feels like he can speak the language a wee bit. And while he's cleaning it, there's one of the doctors in the hospital is leaving for a new job, and he dies in a car accident, and he's cleaning out his room, and he finds his letter inviting him to the job interview. And he takes his tie and puts on his school tie and all that and dresses up for it and goes to the interview and gets the job pretending to be this doctor called Simon Hennessy. And the film's about him basically trying to bluff and bullshit his way through being a doctor when he's a porter. And how he does it is he defers to the staff in the hospital. Like, if there's like a passing nurse, he'll say, "Come on here, come here." And he'll show he'll like present the patient and be like, "Tell me what you think." And they're all like, "Wow, he respects her opinions and all that," because most of the doctors are arrogant tossers and they don't. And he just bluffs and bullshits his way through it. And it's exactly what this guy is doing. It's exactly what he's doing. As you say, all he's done is taking another manager's tactics and he's given them a wee twist and put a wee bit of this real Ranger stuff behind it. There's nothing special about it. It's not a magic spell. It's bluff and it's bullshit and it's smoke and mirrors, and there's no way it can last any more than it was going to last for Simon Hennessy. I mean, it's just the first time you put it under pressure, it will crack and it will collapse. So that was my analogy this morning. That's what I thought of the day. Joe, what about you?
It's Barry's job. That's it. He's got the job. 100%. Right. First of all, there is no takeover. Absolutely no takeover. no matter what you might think, at best, Dave King is selling the shares to a guy called Andrew Kavanagh. He'll then become the largest shareholder and he'll do nothing. He's not going to force change. So you can write that one off. So Barry Ferguson is the current manager, and whoever's in charge of the club, whether it's Patrick Stewart or someone else, they're not going to remove Barry Ferguson. Barry Ferguson will sell the season tickets because he's a real Rangers man. Every bear can relate to him. And the other options are Derek McInnes or who knows what. There's no... Stephen Gerrard, he might like to be linked with it and it sounds quite good, but... I think even someone as dim as Stephen Gerrard, someone that employed Michael Beale as your coach, as your brains, the training ground, Gerrard will be at least wise enough to say, best to leave it alone just now. So you've got Barry Ferguson, and if anyone dares to remove Barry Ferguson, we're going to have a very angry Scottish media pack. They'll have the Daily Record and the BBC on their case to start with. So the easiest option is just to leave it with Barry Ferguson. That keeps everyone happy. And when it goes wrong at some point, when they're screaming for get rid of Ferguson, as they did with Van Bronckhorst, as they did with Beale, as they did with Clement, then it's a problem for further down the line. But why create another problem? So but Barry Ferguson will keep the job. If he was to be removed and the first result that goes against him, why did they get rid of Barry Ferguson? He went to Celtic Park and won. Why did they get rid of Barry Ferguson? He beat Mourinho over two legs. So that is Barry Ferguson's job. It'll be a complete shock and madness if someone comes in and says, "Thanks for your time, Barry. Away back to the Daily Record and Go Radio. And you'll always be welcome back at Ibrox. Here's our bright new shiny manager." He'll not put up with that. And neither will all his media pals. So without any doubt, it's 100% Barry Ferguson's job. No one will dare take it off him.
Music to my ears, Joe. I hope you're as right about that as you are about everything else, mate. That'll suit us down to the ground. Next season, going up against Barry and his makeshift fucking coaching team. That sounds almost too good to be true. And yeah, I know there's some people who are in the comments are saying, "Ah, but he beat us," and he did beat us. That's an undeniable fact. But I prefer to think of it as Brendan beating himself, because Brendan made all these comments about having learned a lesson and hadn't learned anything. I think had we even tweaked, as I said at the start, had we even tweaked the system even a little bit, that game wouldn't even have been in the slightest doubt. But Brendan foolishly believed he could go in there and play the exact same way, whether it being consequential, and it was consequential. I think if I actually think if Clement had still been in charge, Rodgers would not have approached the game the same way, but he foolishly believed that Ferguson would make big changes and drastic changes, and he didn't. He just doubled down on what Clement had already done. Not exactly scientific and not exactly visionary, but smart. Smart enough. Were you going to say something there, Eric?
I was. I actually think that Brendan Rodgers must have been shaking his head in bewilderment watching the game at Dennis Park on Saturday night and saying to himself, like, how in God's name did I capitulate to that?
Yep.
You know?
I would say so. Anything else to add, Joe?
Nope, it's time to move on to Sunday's match at St Johnstone. We'll wrap this up. So, we'll three stands full of Celtic supporters, and I hope that gives the team a bit of a boost. They might get a boost from the result at Ibrox on Saturday, but it's up to themselves now. They know there's a maximum of three more wins to do it, so why not get that done as quickly as possible? Last time at St John's was a pretty decent performance. It was a Saturday night 6-0. I'd almost forgotten that because the next game was Borussia Dortmund. So when we're looking at the highlights of the season, the 6-0 against Aberdeen, the semi-final, and Leipzig will be there. But that game at St John's, that was a nice taster. That was the way things were going. So if you can get a repeat of something like that, you won't have Alec Valley involved. That was the first time he made his mark on Celtic. But there's St Johnstone are in a pretty poor way, and they seem to be quite an open team. Valicari doesn't know how to park the bus. So that should play into our hands. That and three stands for supporters. We should be looking at a comfortable win there. An exciting win rather than a comfortable win. So hopefully there's a good bit of football, a bit of style, something to get us excited. And then it'll be the countdown towards Celtic Park, the Kilmarnock game afterwards. So there's every reason to expect a good Celtic performance this coming Sunday.
Silly question incoming here. You still expect us to fill three stands, although it's no longer a title decider?
100%, yes. Folk have been starved of away tickets. They could sell out Livingston. So I think these tickets all go. One comment I saw coming up, somebody mentioned Tom Hunter, Sports Division. Tom Hunter's been rumoured to be about to get involved at Ibrox for 25, 30 years. I think David Murray was going to bring him in to deal with the retail division, but Tom Hunter's quite savvy. Tom Hunter is a genuine billionaire, and Tom Hunter has never, ever, ever been near that club. So he might have been naturally aligned towards them in his younger days, but getting on in the world, seeing the big world out there, Tom Hunter has went nowhere near them. So there is nobody in the west of Scotland with the money. If you had the money, you'd know what they're like, and you'd realise that you'd be off your head. Like Douglas Park, you're writing off milk. Douglas Park isn't massively wealthy. He's fairly wealthy, but he's lost a hell of a lot in that lot. But I'll finish up with that diversion and pass to Eric for his thoughts on Sunday.
Yeah, it'll be great to see a full away venue because it's something that's been sorely lacking in the game for the last, since the Ibrox side decided to destroy it for everybody in 2018. And there was a knock-on effect from that. And we've seen really in the last couple of years how bad a knock-on effect it's been when other clubs have decided that they're following suit. And I really believe that none of that would ever happened if what happened in 2018 hadn't happened. And we wouldn't be at that juncture. So it is going to be nice to see three full stands, you know, Celtic fans at Celtic or at McDermott Park. With regards to the scoreline, it's going to be similar to a home game because we're going to have so many of our own fans there. I expect us to win it comfortably. I could see us going out there and getting six against them again because these guys are just not at it at the moment. They're firmly rooted to the bottom of the table for a reason. They're just not good enough. I don't see them posing any sort of a challenge to us. And I would expect, I'd expect Dazen to get a hat-trick on Saturday. I think he is. I'm saying it now.
Sunday.
So, Sunday. Or Sunday, sorry. Yeah, I'm expecting that he'll get a hat-trick, and I'm putting it out there now. And I'm going to call that Hibs will do the business against Baza at Ibrox as well. So they're both my calls. So I'm even going to go with a scoreline. I'm going to say 5-0 at McDermott Park, and I'm going to say Hibs will beat them 2-1.
So I'm trying, because that would set up a league decider for the Kilmarnock game. Another league decider against Derek McInnes. Should be nice.
That would
and
be
at Selly Park as well. So that would be good. That would suit us. I was going to say something. What the hell was that? I've forgotten what I was going to say, and this has been happening to me all night.
St Johnston, McDermott Park. Go on, James, think. Give us a story,
Eric,
of a film.
Eric, you said you expect Dyson to score a hat-trick, right? Now, there's the thing, right? One of our fellow Celtic fan podcasts did something this morning, I think it was, where they highlighted this shockingly small number of Celtic players who've scored 40 goals in a season. You think Dyson's going to hit that target by the end?
I'm going to put one out there and say that he is. I mean, he's... Every game he's scoring now. We have, 9 games now after, including if we get to the cup final, yeah, we had 10, didn't we? So we have 9 games left after this.
Well, provided we get there, like, 9, yeah.
Did I look there recently? His average, his goals per game ratio is at about 1.3, 1.4 at the moment.
It's so, 17 in the last 17. So he's on, if he maintains that, he'll hit the 40.
If he's going on current form... You know, if he's going on current form, he's definitely going to hit the 40, and that's going to be a phenomenal achievement. And yep. Look, I'll say, again, great achievement for Dyson and a great achievement for Celtic, but bored, cha-ching, that's my biggest worry. if the board are holding on to have a 40-goal player and somebody comes in with an offer, will they actually just turn it down? Oh, man, I don't even want to think about that.
What about yourself, Mr. McHugh?
40 goals. It's 50-50. It's an incredible rate. He's got 17 and 17. Oh, maintaining right. That is asking a lot. I certainly wouldn't write it off, but I'm not quite as definite as Eric. It's very possible, but it's not a certainty. If he gets 3 at St Johnstone, I think it's more likely, but... It's expecting a lot to maintain a goal a game, and the rest of the team might be switching off slightly. I don't think Maeda knows how to switch off, but to maintain a goal a game is asking a lot. But if anyone can, Dazen can.
Definitely. There was... I forgot. Oh, my God! What night I'm having here. What night I'm having. Forget it. I'm just going to skip past that one. Guys, we can wrap it up there, I think. It's been a good show again tonight. Thank you both for joining me, and thank you everybody else who's joined us and who's watched and commented and especially subscribed, because we hit our 1,000 last week. Remember that you can follow us on Spotify and elsewhere, and as well as on YouTube. So keep on spreading the word, guys, and we'll keep on growing.
Yeah, and just a shout out there to one of our commenters who said we're the dog's bollocks when it comes to podcasts. So we'll take that. So, yeah, guys, thanks a million. And look, I will see you guys again next week for more, hopefully, discussion on the days in my head, a hat trick and a loss at Ibrox. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk then.
Cheers.